Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, August 17th, 2017. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Erickson Defends Statement Siding with Trump, by Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. McLean County Republican Chairman Chuck Erickson was working hard Wednesday morning to defend comments he posted Tuesday on Facebook, siding with President Donald Trump's remarks on the deadly confrontation over the weekend in Virginia. Erickson was responding to growing criticism from local Republicans and others who disagreed with his post that concurred with Trump's assertion that alt-left bears some responsibility for violence in Charlottesville. In his post, Erickson called Trump's remarks a common-sense statement to most people, but not today's media, who only want to target the alt-right and ignore any blame to the alt-left. McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers was among 100 commenters who posted reactions to the 7 p.m. post by Erickson. Chambers said Wednesday that any statement that shifts the blame for Saturday's violence that killed a woman and injured more than a dozen others away from the KKK and neo-Nazi protesters is unacceptable. Two Virginia state troopers also died after their helicopter crashed while monitoring the protest. Condemn them and let's go about doing the work we need to do, said Chambers, who admitted he was at a loss for words to express his opposition to Erickson's remarks. On Wednesday, Erickson said he did not consider the Facebook posting as a statement on behalf of the Republican Party, but as a personal reaction to the president's remarks made at a news conference earlier that day. But he acknowledged that his words can be construed the wrong way by those who viewed it as the local party position. Calling neo-Nazis, the KKK, and similar groups hateful and evil, Erickson said the confrontation between protesters on both sides must be measured by the rule of law. In a news statement released Wednesday morning on behalf of the party, Erickson said that the local GOP condemns all anti-Semitism, racism, the KKK, and the Nazi Party, and any other group which seeks to undermine or remove our constitutional republic form of government and or seeks to eliminate a group of human beings. The party also holds the view the president is not a racist, anti-Semite, or member of sympathizer of the KKK or Nazi Party, said the statement. One should never encourage violence against another human being in an occurrence internal to the country, as in Charlottesville, for their evil philosophy, which Nazism or racism is, unless in self-defense, says the statement. If anyone should act in a way which violates the law, we let law enforcement and due process of law handle the matter. We do not leave the matter to individuals or groups to act in violence against others, regardless of the reason. We do not approve of brutal and illegal acts against others, no matter what their views, to enforce another's political principles. The next story is headlined, First Day of Unit 5 Buses Better, But Not Errorless, by Julia Evelsizer. Normal. McLean County Unit 5 buses hit a few bumps in the road on the first day of school Wednesday, but parents said the kickoff was smoother than last year. After school, parents waited at the North Meadow Village Mobile Home Park in Normal to greet their students at the bus stop. Though the buses were about 15 minutes late, many of the parents chalked it up to the still unfamiliar routine of the first day. Compared to last year, this is going smoothly. Of course, buses are always a little late on the first day because it's hectic, said Joe Falk, who waited for his four children at the stop. Falk said he worked as a bus monitor in the 1990s, and his job was to keep students seated and safe. On the first day, kids tend to be confused about which bus to ride, and it always takes extra time to get buses loaded, he said. Paula Godby also waited at the stop for her elementary and junior high students. I figured all the buses will be a little late this afternoon since it's the first day, said Godby. Last year was rough because you had to expect a 20-minute window for your child to be dropped off, and the pickup time was always up in the air. The bus was on time this morning, and my son texted me and said there were no difficulties. Last school year kicked off with several days of late and overcrowded buses, resulting in frustrated parents and students. But Unit 5 has worked all summer with Cincinnati-based busing contractor First Student to prevent a repeat of that first day. It is our expectation that buses will be timely and safe as they travel to and from school with our students, Superintendent Mark Daniels said Wednesday. We are hearing good things, but as with any first day of school, there will be glitches, and those are being addressed. Melanie Behoon of Bloomington said her children experienced some of those routing missteps. Her daughter was picked up on time to attend Benjamin Elementary School, but the bus never arrived to take her sons to Normal Community High School. We waited for 10 minutes at the stop, and then I decided to drive them to school because I didn't want them to be late on the first day, said Behoon. When she returned home, she noticed a group of teens waiting at a different stop. She took them to school as well. They were 35 minutes late. My husband called transportation, and they were not aware of the issue, she said. Behoon said her children didn't experience any bus delays last year. Mark Bowl, First Student Location Manager, acknowledged that the first day wasn't errorless and that it's common in any district for buses to be late on the first day. That could be because kids aren't at the proper stops and drivers have to turn around to get them. We also build our routes based on knowledge from the previous year, but that doesn't always work out. So we have to figure out the changes to make to routes and go from there, he said. Bowl said First Student and district transportation officials will continue to work out any bugs over the next week, and parents will be notified of changes. We have extra buses at each school for any potential issues, said Bowl. Our goal is to get kids home on time with minimal glitches. On Wednesday morning, Samantha Joyce helped her daughters board the bus in Bloomington. Last year, buses were either coming home significantly earlier or much later. As a working parent, I have to figure out when to be home in time. I hope the timing has been figured out this year, said Joyce. Kim and Justin Moorfield of Normal snapped pictures of their children at the bus stop before school started. Last year, there was overcrowding on the buses, but they seemed to get the problems figured out pretty quickly, said Kim Moorfield. We saw the bus drivers practicing earlier this week. Justin Moorfield said he can only wait and see if the busing will run smoothly for the rest of the year. I just want to know where my kids are going and that they are getting there safely, he said. To prepare for the first day, bus drivers and monitors completed extra training, increased communications outlets with parents, and updated GPS tracking on all buses, which carry about 10,000 Unit 5 students to and from 23 schools in Bloomington Normal, Carlock, Hudson, and Towanda every day. A major factor in last year's issues was the lack of substitute bus drivers. When drivers called off work for illness or personal reasons, First Student didn't have enough drivers in the sub pool to fill the empty seats. This year, First Student has nearly 150 drivers to cover 132 routes. Anyone with bus-related questions or concerns can call 309-557-4287. If parents have other back-to-school questions, they can call the new Unit 5 help number, 309-557-4357. The line is open 7:30 a.m. to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday, until September 1st. The next article is headlined, State Police Probing City Credit Card Use for Japan Trip, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. The Illinois State Police have opened an investigation into the use of a city credit card to buy an airline ticket to let Mayor Terry Renner's girlfriend travel with him to Japan for a week-long Sister Cities anniversary event earlier this month. All inquiries about the Sister Cities credit card charges are being referred to Illinois State Police Zone 5 investigations, said City Attorney Jeff Juergens on Wednesday. Because of the referral to state police, the city's legal department has not completed a formal review of the matter, he added. An official with the State Police Investigations Unit based in Pontiac confirmed Wednesday afternoon there is an investigation, but declined to comment further. At issue is the use of a city credit card, called a procurement card or P-card, to buy a $1,836 airline ticket for Margaret Ehrlich. She accompanied Renner on a city-sponsored trip earlier this month to attend the 55th anniversary celebration of the Sister City's relationship with Asahikawa, Japan. A City of Bloomington staff member bought the economy-class airline tickets for Renner and Ehrlich on May 12th, and the city received a check for that amount May 26th from Ehrlich as payment for her ticket, according to documents the Pantograph received from the city through a Freedom of Information Act request. McLean County State's Attorney Jason Chambers declined to comment Wednesday because of the ongoing investigation, but he said Monday his office did not have a role in the matter. We are not investigating this, said Bloomington Assistant Police Chief Ken Bays. It was referred to Zone 5 investigations. Renner said he is aware of the investigation and believes no violations were committed. The city administration and I, we all followed the law and the protocol for the city of Bloomington, said Renner. There were no violations and nothing questionable. Even if the city did pay for Margaret's ticket, which it did not, it would not have been illegal because she was an official delegate to the once-in-every-decade trip, said Renner. Renner made similar comments during the City Council's meeting Monday night, after Bloomington resident Bruce Meeks publicly called for the council and state police to act against the mayor for allegedly intimidating Meeks, a frequent critic of his administration. Renner called Meeks crazy and pathetic in an early morning email on Sunday. The council formally criticized Renner for a late-night online rant in February 2015 against a conservative blogger who also frequently challenges Renner. And here's some state news headlined, Illinois House Schedules School Funding Veto Override, by John O'Connor. Springfield. The Illinois House will attempt to reverse Governor Bruce Rauner's veto of a public school funding revamp next week, the Speaker said Wednesday, after a failed vote on legislation Democrats introduced to gauge support for the Republican governor's alternative ideas. House Speaker Michael Madigan, a Democrat from Chicago, slammed GOP members who would not support the legislation, which incorporated the expansive changes Rauner made in an amendatory veto. It failed without a single yes vote and 60 against. Most Republicans voted present after a debate in which GOP members admonished Democrats for not attempting a veto override that won't be successful unless at least four Republicans vote for it. You don't even have the guts to put the bill up and see where the votes fall, said Representative Gene Ives, a Republican from Wheaton. School opened in most parts of the state Wednesday. Without a funding plan in place, the first state aid check due August 10th was delayed. Most classes are starting, but many administrators say they can't stay open longer than the fall semester. The House will take a veto override vote August 23rd, Madigan said, after the House session. The Senate voted to override on Sunday, so success in the House would put into law a new funding formula designed to funnel new state money to the neediest schools first. Despite Rauner's insistence that he's willing to compromise, Madigan said he questions the governor's sincerity. He said he offered a compromise last weekend on the issue which Rauner rejected. He would not elaborate. Rauner spokeswoman Laurel Patrick denied the governor received any offer. Rauner used his power of a mandatory veto, available to only 7 U.S. governors, to significantly alter the legislation, known as Senate Bill 1, the first major change to the way public schools are financed in 2 decades. His biggest gripes are that it unfairly favors Chicago schools over the rest of the state with a bailout for a mismanaged system and hamstrings future state funding flexibility. Rauner's action cut $450 million slated to go to Chicago and redistributed it throughout the state. He's produced an analysis that shows more money this year for the vast majority of school districts. But his edits also include changes that opponents say will penalize school districts in the future, counting against them property tax revenue they can't access. I liken it to a payday loan, Staunton School Superintendent Dan Cox told a House committee earlier Wednesday. We get more money now, some of us, at a higher cost later. During a political event in Springfield, Rauner blamed Madigan and other Chicago Democrats for blocking his changes and exoriated the corrupt political machine in Chicago. Rauner said Chicago Democrats' self-interest in state government has brought the city high taxes, unemployment, violence, and terrible schools. They don't run the political operation to benefit the people in Chicago, and I can sure as heck tell you they don't run the government for the benefit of people of Central Illinois or Southern Illinois or Northwest Illinois or the suburbs of Chicago either, Rauner said. House Majority Leader Barbara Flynn Curry, a Chicago Democrat, said, "It's racially and geographically divisive for Rauner to use the bailout label." Taylorville Schools Chief Gregory Furstenow dismissed the statements as pitting school district against school district. Craig Clark, superintendent in Centralia, said the plan is about equal opportunity for every student to shine. Senate Bill 1 works for Chicago, Centralia, and Cairo. And here's a story headlined, Duckworth, Support Ag. U.S. Senator vows to advocate strongly for crop insurance. By Derek Bay. Bloomington. U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth rejects the idea the onus is on Democrats to fight to keep crop insurance in the federal budget. I refuse to let the starting point for negotiations be a massive cut. We need to start from where crop insurance was currently, said Duckworth, Illinois' junior senator and a Hoffman Estates Democrat, of a proposal from President Donald Trump to gut federally funded coverage. I will advocate very strongly for crop insurance. Duckworth, on a visit to the Illinois Farm Bureau in Bloomington on Wednesday, also spoke about the upcoming farm bill, trade, and Trump's response to last weekend's clash between white supremacists and counter-protesters in Charlottesville, Virginia. I'm going to work as hard as I can to put more money into the Department of Agriculture. Programs that are cut in the president's proposal include everything from support for innovative programs for youth farmers to protecting safe drinking water in rural communities, she said. Of the North American Free Trade Agreement, which Trump hopes to renegotiate during talks that started Wednesday, Duckworth said she hopes to keep agriculture from getting mixed up in disputes over manufacturing. The Trans-Pacific Partnership failed largely because of a lot of failures on the manufacturing side with Chinese products, but had nothing to do with agriculture, she said. We are the greatest agriculture producer in the world. We're the gold standard. People in China want to buy food grown here. Duckworth also rejected Trump's claim that there are good people on both sides of the tension in Charlottesville, where white supremacists marched to preserve a Confederate monument and a woman was killed protesting them. If you stand with Nazis and you stand with racists, then you are not a fine person, then you are not a patriot, and you are not someone who truly loves this country, because it goes against the very values that founded our nation, she said. The next story is entitled, Move-in Full of Mixed Emotions. New students excited, nervous, settling into ISU residence halls. by Kevin Barlow. Normal. Jordan Jones remembers those butterflies in his stomach from last year. At that time, the Chicago native was moving into his Waterston Towers dorm, anxious to start his freshman year at Illinois State University in Normal. A year ago, I was the freshman moving in, not knowing what to expect, he said. On Tuesday, Jones, now a sophomore, was volunteering with the ISU Curb Birds, students who assist with the residence hall move-in. I remember how the Curb Birds helped me out, and now I want to return the favor, and it feels great, he said. Wednesday was the first of three move-in days for students at Hewitt, Manchester, Waterson, and the Tri-Towers at ISU. By Friday, more than 60% of the dorm residents will be in. Classes start on Monday. It's a day of very mixed emotions, said Pamela Martin of Chicago, who was moving her daughter, Alyssa, into Waterson Towers. I have a lot of pride right now, but I'm going to miss her. For Alyssa, she was also feeling a sense of pride. I am the first girl in the family to attend college, and that means a lot to me, she said. Freshman Matt Sudd of Naperville was also feeling a mixture of emotions as he was waiting on an elevator to take him to his room. My first concern is just finding my room, he said. After that, it is meeting my roommate because I don't know who that is. There are a lot of things I'm nervous about right now. His father, Rob, was also battling some nerves. I know he will be fine, but I just want to get this part of the process over with and let him get started, he said. Another father, Phil Severino of Tinley Park, was moving his daughter Emily into Waterson Towers. You want them to do everything that they have to do and do it well, he said. You also don't want them to do some of the things you did in school, or at least not as much of it. The day was full of excitement for Levister Johnson, the vice president for the Division of Student Affairs at ISU. You have to love it when a day comes together like this, he said. We have beautiful weather and everyone is in a great mood. The operation here is so succinct. It's my second year of going through this, and it's just an outstanding process. Johnson said some changes have been made to the ISU's preview program, a two-day summer orientation program required for all incoming freshmen. We believe this will set students on the right track as far as welcoming them and what it means to be a part of the Redbird family, he said. Both parents and students had a chance to learn more about what it means to be a part of this community, and I don't know there has ever been a more important time to get that message across. Johnson had other reasons for high emotions on Wednesday. He has a son that was also beginning his college career at ISU. Yeah, I am really excited, he said. It's such a great day. C.C. Brookins, an assistant director with University Housing Services, said the move-in was going smoothly on Wednesday, with sunny skies and a slight breeze to help keep the humidity at acceptable levels. It's a ball, and things are going very smoothly, she said. It's just so much fun to meet so many new people in one day. Anne Marie Camps, a vice president with the Association of Residence Halls Advisors, said she also was enjoying meeting new people on one of the biggest and most important days of their lives. People are overjoyed with being here at ISU, and even though moving is such a stressful process, I feel everyone is happy to be here, and that is the best thing about it, she said. I've seen a couple of parents cry, but it's tears of joy because their babies are leaving them. But we reassure them that this is the place for them to be, and they will still come back home for visits. And the next story is headlined, State, DUI and Hit and Run is Bloomington Man's Third, by Edith Brady Lunny. Bloomington. A Bloomington man faces his third DUI charge in McLean County in connection with a hit-and-run crash Monday that left a 16-year-old boy critically injured. Stephen McEwen, 32, is charged with leaving the scene of a personal injury accident, two felony counts of aggravated driving under the influence and a misdemeanor DUI charge. Bond was set at $750,000, meaning he must post $75,035 to be released from jail. One of the felony DUI counts indicates that the Monday night incident was McEwen's third drunken driving offense. He has another pending in Logan County, according to court records. According to a probable cause statement read in court by Assistant State's Attorney N. Chi Lin, McEwen was at two bars before he struck the youth, who was on a bicycle in the 1400 block of Six Points Road, between Morris Avenue and Alexander Road, about 8:39 p.m. Bloomington police received a tip that McEwen had been in the area driving a white truck. When police interviewed him the following day, he admitted he had panicked and fled the scene after hitting the bicyclist, said Lynn. After the crash, McEwen abandoned the truck that is owned by another person and stated he had struck a deer, according to the statement. McEwen was charged in July with DUI in Logan County, in addition to two McLean County convictions in 2008 and 2014. An August 25th arraignment is scheduled. And here's a story from the Money section entitled, Bagel Shop Opens in October. Einstein Brothers Adds Second Location, by Julia Evelsizer. Bloomington. A second Einstein Brothers Bagels will open in the Twin Cities this fall. The franchise bagel and coffee restaurant will fill the former Smashburger location at 1401 North Veterans Parkway in Lakewood Plaza. The first Einstein Brothers shop is in the Bone Student Center at Illinois State University in Normal. Mark Braltz is owner-operator of the new franchise. He oversees six Einstein locations in Champaign-Urbana. Braltz is aiming for an October opening. We've been making our way over to Bloomington to scout the market for some time, said Braltz. It looks like a really strong market for the concept we offer. We're excited to meet and get to know people. Einstein Brothers serves fresh bagels in several flavors, sandwiches, desserts, and coffee, and is open for breakfast, lunch, and catering. The shop will be open at 6 a.m. Monday through Saturday and at 7 a.m. Sunday. Braltz said closing times are still being determined. He said the building will be renovated in the kitchen and serving areas with flooring, paint, and lighting. About 50 people can be seated in the dining room and outdoor patio combined. Around 15 people will be hired full and part-time. Braltz said with this location being off-campus, he hopes to serve a different portion of the community. Hopefully we'll serve some of the families and businesses who wouldn't normally venture to ISU campus, he said. We hope to get to know State Farm and Country Financial and other great local companies that employ so many folks. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for August 17th. Please stay tuned.